Good morning, and welcome to The Conversation. My name is Ed Holohan, and my guest this morning is my best old pal, Miss Carrie Trevorinus. Miss Carrie, as she is known to her community at Pleasant Ridge Waldorf School. Good morning.
Good morning, Eddie.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm glad to be here with you.
I'm glad to be here with you, because I really want to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
So it's good that you're here.
I want to talk to you.
Otherwise, and I'm so glad we're not on the telephone. I mean, I know it has its place, but I'd much rather see you.
Yes.
When talking to
and
you.
And I'm so glad we're not on TV.
Oh, you mean because of the way I'm dressed?
No.
It's harsh, but true. I dressed for radio. You
yeah,
gave me
I
that
did,
line this
I did
morning.
Too.
Yeah, thank you. Let's get right in it. Well, I should tell folks that specifically, you will be the eighth grade teacher this year. And later on, we'll get into how long you've been doing this. Mm-hmm. But you have the eighth grade class this year. It's your last year with this remarkable group mm-hmm. of young people. Mm-hmm. What's that feel like? It's got to be all over the place.
Yeah, it is all over the place. I love these students. We've been together since first grade, so we're really comfortable together,
mm-hmm.
and we know each other really well, so there's not that nervousness of how it's going to go. I kind of know how it's going to go,
yeah.
And I feel like we've done a lot of the hard work already. And
you know what? It's a little like, raising your own family. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there are some things you don't know until you know them, and then you learn the child, and then the child learns you. And
right. I don't think there's going to be major surprises. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
Yes,
but
please. Yeah, good. Thank you.
There was one new student this year, and I'm really excited about her coming.
Oh,
so
really?
There's always
one new one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have 19, which is the exact number I graduated last time. It's a good amount. And I mean, I'm trying not to think too much like a year ahead. Of course, I'm going to miss them.
Yeah.
But if we didn't have this year ahead, I feel like we would have this bond forever.
Mm-hmm.
That we already have, and I feel like they're ready to go out into the world, and I know we'll both be okay without each other.
That's a mouthful, you know. I should tell folks that Mary, who is the person I'm married to, and I have been reading to your students since mm-hmm. the first grade. That's once a week in the library, one of my favorite hours mm-hmm. of any week
theirs
ever.
Too.
Is it?
It really is.
It's.
They look forward to it.
I keep being surprised by this. I mean, I really do. These people are teenagers now, and they still like piling up on the floor and listening
yes.
to a story.
Mm-hmm.
You've given me some reasons for that, like it's relaxing, or why do you think they still want to be? Well, I still like being read to, too.
But, yeah.
So maybe it's the same answer, but I don't know. Why do you think they still?
Well, I think it's different in each grade. You know, now in by seventh or eighth grade, they get to snuggle up together. You know, they kind of need that. They need to touch
yeah.
one another
right.
and rest. Some of them close their eyes and even fall asleep. It's, you know, it's placed on, we do it on Friday afternoons, right?
Right?
So that's
right.
a perfect time to just let go a little bit. And again, it's the relationship that you've built with them. They're so comfortable. And they don't have to be on for anything.
You know,
they can just receive.
That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I shouldn't say especially at this age. At any age,
to
people
not
feel the need or don't to be on stage.
Right.
And you're right. It's, yeah, I very rarely feel played to
uh-huh.
by them. You
good,
know?
Good. I They're feel, just their true, authentic selves.
Yeah.
And so are you.
It feels like that.
And
yeah.
it's, so that's really nourishing. And they can just, like, lay there and be loved. Yeah.
So you've had them for 7 years, going to have them for 8 years. This is too big a question, of course. What do you hope they got out of that from you, from the school, from their classmates? Mm-hmm. You can go anywhere you want with
yeah.
that. It's a long time now. What do you hope they got?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could say a lot of things or I could say one simple thing, but I hope that they know to always do the right thing.
Mm.
Because they've had all these opportunities to make mistakes and kind of bounce themselves off of each other and, you know, with their personalities
mm-hmm.
and also through the curriculum. You know, we study history, we study physics, we study chemistry and, you know, kind of both have wonder and awe for the world and also know some of the disappointments that have happened in history. And so I think they're taking that all in and knowing who they want to be and who they don't want to be. And so by developing their capacities, figuring out, okay, what is the right thing? Is there a right thing in this situation? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there isn't. Discerning what that is through their thinking and their feeling, mm-hmm. and then having the will to do that.
Now, I know from talking to high schoolers, a lot of whom came through the system, the Waldorf education system, mm-hmm. They're very aware of what, I don't know, I guess it's neuroscience has called nature and nurture, you know, that mm-hmm. whole thing. How do you come out wired into the world? And then
right.
what does the world do for you or to you? Mm-hmm. Now, I know your kids are younger than high schoolers, but do they have a sense that they came into the world being a certain way and the world shapes them after that? Or is it just...
We have not talked about that too much. I have a feeling that that's the kind of thing they talk about, you know, at sleepovers or like
okay.
you know, maybe on our eighth grade trip, we could
right.
go there.
Right.
You know, they're just starting to come in seventh grade into having this perspective and realizing their perspective is different than another person's perspective. You know, so separating themselves from the world. And I don't know if they've thought
I
about
wonder.
That. I'm sure some, yes, and maybe some know who it is.
Depends on what your home is like,
yes.
I'm sure. Yeah, I sure think about it a lot, and mostly because I think it's fun to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it could be daunting if that were your career's work or something.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at them, I see somebody who looks like they were probably shy from day one, or somebody who's mm-hmm. in showbiz probably from day one. I won't name any names, of course. And it's fascinating to me to see how they deal with that in the world.
Yeah.
You know, do you leave yourself in the corner? Do you go start telling jokes? And you're right, they're just now getting the notion that I am who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, the ego wouldn't really come in until later, like age 21. You just get glimmers of that.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, they're still just 13, 14 years
right.
old. But, you know, they all have their temperaments, too. And ideally, we're balancing our temperaments little by little as we get older. And by the time we're an adult, hopefully we're
perfectly balanced. Like you and me.
Right.
Yay.
But, you know, we might have a primary one and... I mean, I'm sure you've seen their evolution over the years.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's one part of being with the same group for that many years. You kind of wear off your rough edges with each other, like being tumbled, you know, like rocks being tumbled together.
I like that. Yeah.
And also bringing out parts of you that are kind of more underneath, right? Being allowed to show your more vulnerable selves too.
Yeah, I know Mary and I compare notes every time, especially at the beginning of every year, you know, when you haven't seen them for a couple of months, except occasionally on the street, but mm-hmm. not in that intense way. And it's stunning.
You know, how they change?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the most obvious is physically. You're 6 inches tall.
Right.
How did you do that? When did you do that?
I know.
And then to much more complicated issues, you know, emotionally and expressively.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, expressively, that's a big word. And maybe we'll get into it later, but I want to get into it now because it's maybe my favorite thing about the way you people do education is almost from day one, these are the most expressive children I've ever met.
Really?
I don't know if it's because they're not afraid to be expressive or they're encouraged to be expressive, but man, it's a pleasure to hear a child speak out loud about mm-hmm. what I think right now or
mm-hmm.
what I'm feeling right now. It's... You know what? They're not afraid of grown-ups.
Yes.
And that's remarkable.
That was one of my first impressions, my first time walking into a Waldorf school, is a teenager just looked me right in the eye and said, hello. And I thought, whoa.
This is
different, yeah.
Especially, now I'm a lot older than you are, and when I was in school, it was pretty close to a fear-based relationship
mm-hmm.
with grown-ups,
sure.
with teachers.
Different kinds of discipline,
yeah.
you know, and different kinds of expectations.
Entirely.
Mm-hmm.
entirely. This is not your first graduating class, is it?
No, second.
So that's 15 going on 16 years mm-hmm. under your belt. Are you going to do it again? Or am I divulging what shouldn't be divulged?
Well, I would love to. I plan on it, entirely plan on it. It would be my son's class that I would take next, which is very sweet. And it just happens sometimes in a smaller school, in a smaller community. And I just think if it's a destiny thing, then let's do it.
Wow.
And it's my second son. You know, some
right.
It depends on the relationship. And the first son needs somebody else than mm-hmm. he has an authority. And the second son, I don't think so. I think
it'll be okay.
I think we have that destiny together.
Gee, I don't know if I... Nah, I won't ask you. What if it isn't?
Well, yeah, then we'll figure that out.
Does one of you quit?
Well, there are options. You
sure.
know, you can share or you can step away.
Sure,
or,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. I think
they'll
so.
Be fine. God, they're so teeny in the first grade.
I know.
They're little teeny, tiny people.
And they're so sweet, too. And I think it's a balm to come back around after, you know, teens are wonderful, too. They're all beautiful in their own way, and but they're so different. So, you know, the teens love you, but they show it in a different way. And so when you come back around and then you've got these little ones just clinging to you, I remember really loving that when I came back around last time.
Yeah, they get so close. They like to be so close. It's that clinging is a great word, in the best sense of that word. I mean, it reminds me of other primates in the jungle when you see people when you see apes sitting in a tree and they're basically in a pile because they like being in a pile.
Yes.
It's really neat.
Yep.
Little kids are so good at that. Now. The Waldorf system is considerably different from a lot of other educational systems in that, as I'm sure folks have gathered by now, you have the same class for 8 years.
That's right.
I'm trying to get my head around that. That's for every subject for 8 years.
Yeah, except
I mean, basically,
some special subjects too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I could make a bad joke here, but I won't.
Okay.
The things you send them out for. But basically, I mean, you started to enumerate, you know, everything from physics to
the
Bible to, you know, whatever. I love, what do you guys call them, blocks?
Blocks, yes, a month, about, you
would
know,
you
3 to 4 weeks.
Would you tell people what that is?
Sure.
What does that mean?
So I think in other schools, a block is a time in the day, but for us, a block is... a time in the year, maybe 3 or 4 weeks of time in which we dive more deeply into a particular subject, such as history or mathematics or language arts. And then each year has some specifics within those categories. You know, in eighth grade, we'll study more modern history. We kind of worked our way from ancient times all the way up toward modern.
Yeah. And you do that basically with everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm. With all those subjects.
So I gotta ask you, how do you know everything, Miss Carey? Were you born knowing everything, or did you have to learn everything?
I had to learn everything. Well, it's kind of like being a Jill of all trades. Can you say that? Do other people
you
say
just
that?
Did. And I like it. And I'm making a note. Jill of all trades. Got it. Okay.
And it's designed that way because then it's always fresh. If it's fresh for the teacher, then it's going to be fresh for the students. It literally cannot get stale because it's new for me too. And even if I've taught it before, it's been 8 years or 9 years, and the students are different and I'm different and the world is different.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't bring it the same way. So if I can bring my curiosity and my striving and my excitement about something that I just was refreshed on or learned, then that translates to the students too.
Wow. That, again, that is different from my memories of education. I mean, so much of it was sort of rote. You knew that this teacher had said exactly this.
Yeah.
How many thousand times?
When it depends on the teacher too.
Sure.
And I don't really know a lot about other education systems except, you know, the school that I went to as a child and then the Waldorf mm-hmm. system. So I think it just depends on the person, but I know for sure that it's definitely fresh for me because every summer I'm going through an intensive to learn the next class. I'm in the midst of it just now, just 2 weeks of steeping myself in logarithmic spirals and...
Excuse me?
Biography. I know, right?
No, hold biography. It. Would you say that again?
Logarithmic spirals.
What? Ms. Carey?
Mm-hmm.
What are logarithmic spirals, please?
Well, it's a mathematical formula whereby each number, it's what is it, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8... You're testing me now.
Are you crossing
13,
my eyes
et
now?
Cetera. And nature is like shells are
yes.
based on this. It's like the Fibonacci series.
I
if
do
you've heard.
Happen to be familiar with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and so and it creates, and then the golden mean comes into that too. So hopefully the students aren't listening because this is going to spill the beans. But it spirals out exponentially.
Should we ask them to leave the room for the moment?
Right.
And let them know when it's okay to come back?
I doubt that they would listen to this.
I think you'll be okay. I hope. Never mind. It doesn't matter what I hope. Yes. Math.
Yes.
Science.
History.
What else are you planning on this year? What else are you going to give them?
Besides for the curriculum, we do organic chemistry, so carbohydrates and fats, oils, like kitchen chemistry kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And what else? American history, geography of the world. We're in algebra, pre-algebra.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you have a lot of... I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Because... times being what they are, in this state and in other states, there's an awful lot of top-down scrutiny and, in some cases, legislation about
how you teach what. Yeah.
Yeah, not only what to teach, but how you teach it. You know, you have to say this and you can't say this. I'll spare folks the details. They know what the details are. Is there... pressure? I don't even know what the top is in Waldorf. Is there a top-down
No, it's
pressure?
Pretty flat organizational structure, but I think we go about our teaching pretty carefully and consciously. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're evolving along with the times, too. And so we don't just teach something that's old, right?
We,
you know, for instance, in seventh grade, there's a block called the Age of Discovery or Exploration, and that can be really problematic, right? When Europe set across the seas and basically colonized the quote unquote new world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go about that in different ways because we all know that the explorers were kind of the bad guys. And so
they certainly had their moments, yes.
Right. So we taught about the indigenous cultures and then also taught about exploration of the sky, like the astronomers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're not going to do anything that marginalizes a people.
Right.
Or peoples.
Right. And I'm assuming, you know, since folks are of generally like minds and like hearts in the system, you don't need constant reminders of that?
No. I mean, that's the... So we have something called freedom in teaching, and there's a lot of trust built on that.
Yeah.
And... but everybody's, you know, people are watching. The parents know what I'm teaching. My mm-hmm. colleagues know what I'm teaching. We're in each other's rooms. You know, we would know if there was something that wasn't appropriate.
Okay.
And we all, you know, we're all going through these fresh new trainings every year, too. So, and as a faculty, we're studying DEIJ, diversity, equity, inclusion, mm-hmm. and justice. And, you know, so if we need ideas, like, oh, I need some biographies of people of color or... you know, some stories from other cultures. We have all the help that we could possibly
okay.
need to find those.
Okay. So when I think of it, I'm getting the picture that my idea of a teacher's summer off is might be a little out of date or never was right.
Well, you know, there's work to do, but you have to kind of contain it because you need a break too. So
I would think so. This
so
is
when people
pretty
ask,
intense stuff.
Right. When people ask how your summer is going, I try to just say, great. You know, I try to keep, you know, one full day a week, and then it kind of ramps up to two full days a week, and then really let go with my family.
I'm glad to hear that. That's a great place to take a little break. We're going to step away. Hey, thanks for tuning in this morning. We do so appreciate that you listen to this show. I hope you're enjoying it. My name is Ed Holohan. My guest this morning is Carrie Trevoranus, who's, well, I might as well say it, she's my favorite teacher in the whole wide world. So.
Thanks, Eddie.
Okay, you stay right there. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT, our favorite community radio station. Isn't that right, Carrie?
Isn't this our favorite?
Good. Mm-hmm. My guest this morning is Carrie Trevoranus, as we like to say it now. I've only been wrong for 8 years, but I can handle it. I've been wrong about a lot of things for way more than 8 years. Carrie, well, thanks again for doing it. I will say that too many more times, but thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for sharing stuff.
You folks are fond of saying head, heart, and hands when you describe education.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful. What does it mean?
Head, heart, and hands. Well, it's kind of a short way of saying thinking, feeling, and willing, and, you know, corresponding to those parts of the body.
Say that again, please.
Thinking. Which in the head and feeling and the heart and willing with your hands or your limbs.
Okay.
And it's basically the idea that if you engage all of these parts of a child, that they'll learn better and we will all learn better. And so it's kind of a whole child approach. So, and those things are involved, you're engaged, you're thinking, feeling, and willing throughout, of course, the day and the week and the year, but even like every hour too. So for instance, if
could you take me through a day or part of a day?
Well, so in I teach a main lesson, which is the morning lesson. It's those 2 hours in the morning when ideally the child is the most fresh and ready to learn. And so if in seventh grade, if I'm teaching about the Renaissance and we're talking about Leonardo da Vinci. So I would tell a story. I would tell his biography. And that's engaging the thinking, right? They're taking in this new information.
Right.
And they might be feeling things, too, because we're infusing our story with all of the senses, right? And we're learning he was sort of erratic and obviously brilliant and maybe lonely. And he did not like the violence that was coming into his world. And when they invaded and destroyed this model of a horse statue that he was working on that never got built. So, you know, we're telling all these juicy tidbits. And of course, the children are feeling things about that. And then we let it rest. We use the sleep life, right? So they go home. We're not kind of working with that topic right away. And they come back the next day, and then we would do some willing with that. So maybe I would have them, if I taught them about his journals, you know, his neat journals, right. I would have them come up with an invention and make a journal page, and they could do sketches. And that's the time when they could go away. You know, I wouldn't be talking then. They could be working with their classmates and really being creative and drawing or even building something and kind of entering into that idea of being a Renaissance man and you know, thinking outside of the box. So in that, you know, two-day rhythm, it turns into a three-day rhythm, but they've engaged their thinking and feeling and willing. And that's the idea is that they're more connected than to the material.
Why doesn't everybody teach that way?
Well, you know, I think I have ideas about that, but that might be even another show. But
okay, it's a deal. We can do that.
But I think it's because of the top-down thing that you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
You know, if there's a common core, and I don't know. I don't know how it goes over there, so
right.
I don't wanna you know, make
no, I
a
get
guess.
It.
Yeah,
I get it.
But I like it. I like the way we do it.
Yeah. It just occurs to me, and this is not in the notes, if I ever wander too far, you say, hey, you didn't tell me we were going to talk about it. But it occurs to me, and it's exactly to your point, the marvelous tradition, practice of the gigantic project when you're an eighth grader.
Oh, yes.
I mean, Mike, I have seen some stuff in my time with you guys from the eighth graders. It's mind-boggling from, you know, building a kayak to, you know, rewriting an educational system to...
Yeah, right.
Stunning.
They are so inspiring.
Now, your crew knows they're facing this, obviously, because everybody does. How do children react to that?
Well, again, different ways probably according to who they are, but I know they've seen them done so well. So they know that these kids who they've been following for so many years, if they can do it, then they can probably do it too. And it's definitely out of a comfort zone to do public speaking in front of your community.
That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's kind of like what we're doing today, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do
It's a big deal.
You have to step into something that's not that comfortable.
Right.
And then you feel good about that success. And so many of them have chosen their projects and a few of them haven't.
Really?
And that's
already?
Fine. Yes, yeah. Because some of them have a summer element that they need to do because weather related or, mm-hmm. And I really love the projects that they've chosen. We try to encourage them to do things like with their hands, you know, build something or learn a new trade. They're kind of an apprentice studying underneath an expert. So
I've noticed that. And that's another thing. I keep calling it a system. Is there a better word than the Waldorf system, or is that okay?
Maybe philosophy.
Okay, yeah. I've noticed that in the Waldorf philosophy that mentoring, mm-hmm. whether the person is older than your grandfather mm-hmm. or in the next grade, mentoring is a huge part of the process. People are always learning from somewhat older people.
And I love that. I think we're losing that in our culture.
Big time.
And so to place a teen in that position where you are not the expert, you know, you need to listen and learn from this master. Mm-hmm. And of course they choose somebody who they feel comfortable with.
Sure.
So it's already, you know, going to be a good foundation there. But yeah, and I have to write up something just probably this summer of, you know, what sorts of things do you ask your mentor? What is it like to be in that kind of curious state, because we're so used to looking things up online or,
yeah,
you know, so.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's real different to have a living, breathing, really experienced person talk to you about stuff rather than Googling, you know, what's algebra.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So some of their projects are, you know, fly fishing and coaching a soccer team.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Somebody wants to do baking and. It's kind of all across the board. I'm excited about
it. It's very cool. Yeah. It's funny to be looking forward to the end of the school year, but I find myself looking forward to that wonderful show in the gym where people present. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's bells and whistles, there's showbiz, and public speaking.
Man. Yes.
You know, as you know, anytime you give Americans in particular rank your fears, mm-hmm. you know, death is like third.
Right.
Public speaking, bam, that's it. Yeah. You know, it's the scariest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it is for a lot of folks. It's a tough thing.
Is it natural for you? I mean, it's clearly, it looks natural, but.
It looks natural.
But it's hard for everyone.
Oh, I get terrible stage fright. I mean, really. In fact, my excuse, and I've done a lot of stuff from creativity workshops and all of that kind of stuff to speaking and organizing. So I have a lot of experience in front of people,
mm-hmm.
and I am terrified before every single episode.
Mm.
I'm serious.
You're doing really well, Eddie.
this is easier than public speaking,
uh-huh,
you know, because it's you and me.
Right.
I'm talking to you and Steve. Hey, thanks for engineering, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
It's great to have you over there. What a comfort. I've tried doing these kinds of shows and it's just me and the guest, and I am at that board that Steve is at. It's
too stressful. Many things.
You're going to lose either the technology, you know, you hit the wrong switches, or you're going to lose the conversation because you're paying attention to the mm-hmm. board. And it's a fascinating thing. So anyway, thanks, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is the first of many. This is our first ride together, Steve and myself.
Oh.
What the heck was I talking? Oh, public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I told myself, well, it's because this is important to you, and that's why you're nervous.
Yes.
You know, it's not just fear of failure or fear of stuttering or fear of being off key. It's important.
Right.
And if you don't feel a little, you're probably not.
Yeah, maybe you don't care.
Pushing very hard. Yeah, right. Or maybe you don't give a hoot. So once I learned that. And then, of course, oh my God! Have you ever read a list of incredibly talented performers who were blindingly stage stricken?
I just feel like they all must be.
Yeah. Ella Fitzgerald was my favorite.
Right? Really?
Maybe the greatest singer who mm-hmm. ever lived, certainly the most natural sounding singer mm-hmm. and creative and all over, and just mind numbing, kill me, don't make me go out there and do this, hurling before every show, locking herself in the bathroom until the producer says, Ella, you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you just gotta do
bam, the switch. It's
yeah. And that's your will, right? Picking you up and taking your limbs and moving you there.
That's all it is. When your body is saying, no, please don't make me do this.
Saying, right.
Yeah, to go do it.
So she had a strong will.
She sure did.
Because she sure did it.
I think she did pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, all things considered, mm-hmm. I think she did pretty well. Wow, I didn't know we were going to cover Ella Fitzgerald.
I love Ella.
That is kind of why we call it conversations.
Right.
Instead of so-and-so interviews, so-and-so.
Right.
This is conversations. Where the heck were we? Oh, yeah, projects. Eighth grade. I loved, I won't use specific names, but I'm thinking of one student in particular last year who was born to work a room. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
As soon as it was their turn, they took the mic and wham.
Yes.
It's magic.
I admire that so much. Those people who are just funny and charismatic, just off the cuff.
Yeah. And they're talking about a serious project.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't a comedy routine. It was, you know,
mm-hmm.
serious stuff. Bless their hearts, all of them. I am so looking. Can Mary and I come back and read next year?
Oh, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
What are you doing in fall of 2024?
2024?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'm still here.
Still reading? Maybe.
Oh, boy, would I love to start over mm-hmm. with those little numbers.
Yes.
Those little ankle people.
Yeah.
The people who really do fit in the library,
right,
laying on the floor.
Fit instead on the carpet instead of spilling all over everywhere.
Just so you folks have the image, we read in the library, and as Carrie says, it's once a week on a Friday afternoon when everyone is winding down from a fairly intense week of school. And right from day one, the method of listening was Mary and I are in a chair each, reading from a real-life book, paper book, and there's these students stretched out on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And some at the little desks or little tables drawing.
Yes, you know. I'm so glad because it was hard for me to get used to, I must admit. I'm used to a very rigid, you know,
like
if we're reading,
captive.
We're reading. So
right.
you sit there and you, and I've gradually learned that there's all kinds of ways to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to be doing something with your hands, it's really kind of dumb to tell you not to do that.
It's something to get over for those of us who are the ones reading or speaking. I get that in class, too.
I never thought. I bet you do. Let's go there for a minute. What does that feel like when little Mickey seems to not...
Well, you know, if you're friends, right, when there's a way of listening when you're really engaged in eye contact. And for me, it helps me think when I know somebody's truly listening.
Okay.
And if somebody kind of looks checked out... I feel like I lose my words, right?
Interesting.
There's like a give and take. So actually in class, they do have to listen. I'm mm-hmm. not okay with them just doodling during the story. I mean, they can do that other times. But if I were reading aloud, I think that would be different because the words are right in front of me. I don't have to think of the words.
Sure. So it's a back and forth for you that you need the other side to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it. I get mm-hmm. it.
Because I'm thinking of what I'm going to say right then, and I'm feeding off of what they're giving me.
Yeah. Do you like reading to them?
I love reading to them. I still do it sometimes, like at lunch or snack, if it's getting too loud, or I just need them to eat, actually.
Yes, you need to nourish yourselves.
Yeah.
And
there's so many good stories still, you know, for this age group, and so... Every once in a while, I'll pull something out. Or if we didn't get to it in class and it's mm-hmm. a story I want to read to them, I'll do it while they eat snack.
That is so important to the philosophy, to Waldorf. I noticed that from day one, that books, story are absolutely central, are just so critical to the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about that a little bit? Why? Why do kids need to be read to?
Well, this is reinforced for me every time I watch. We have 5 and 6 year old boys, and if I'm not the one reading, somebody else is reading to them, and you get to watch their faces.
Oh,
I mean, just mouths open.
Oh, boy.
Eyes just full of wonder, and every reaction. You know, they're little actors at that age. I mean, particularly one of them, just like delight.
Particularly
and,
one of them always is, yes.
Yeah, concern, and they just every, like, eating it all up. And so I think about Rudolf Steiner and designing this curriculum, like, he knew that. that children would receive a story more than, you know, whatever.
More than just about anything else. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. More than anything else. That's true. And even particularly more, even more than reading aloud, if you tell it, if it's like a storyteller. I mean, there's few times in my life when I've actually watched a true storyteller, you know, weaving the tale. And I mean, that's hard work. You really have to internalize and have the story be part of you.
True.
To tell it by memory.
Yeah.
It's an important part of the curriculum, and it changes over the years. But, you know, in first grade, it's fairy tales and things like that, and
right.
You're kind of telling them with wonder, and the children are right there with you.
It's true. The faces, now that you mention it, yeah, Mary and I are very lucky that half of the reading time, one of us is not reading,
right.
Which means we get to watch.
Yes.
And you're right about the awestruck. I mean, talk about in the story, especially the littler they are, the younger they are. They are nowhere but on that road that you're reading about to the castle that you're reading. They are there.
Yes.
There's no remove. It's really...
Right. That's why it's so important that what you read them or tell them is good stuff. They're taking it all in so deeply.
Some of the most serious conversations we have had, I'm talking about... the school teacher across from me and the volunteer here is about what to read.
Content.
And what to be careful about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's for this year. I think that might be for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's not for any year.
Right.
But yeah, it's important, isn't it?
Because there's a whole group there, you know, and you have to, it has to be appropriate for everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Most of these, I would say all of them, they all talk about reading at home. It's you know, it's what we do. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I remember one of them. Again, I have to leave them all nameless because it's not fair. I want to give them all top billing,
and
I might embarrass somebody.
Right.
I remember one of our children. I believe this was in the fourth grade. So there's still a ton of innocence hanging on there. We were talking about swear words in particular, and you know how she's talking about her household, and we're not allowed to say this and this and this and this, and one of the words we're not allowed to say is stupid, because that's really, you know, that's mean.
Right.
And so, my parents, and I know the child's parents very well.
Mm-hmm.
Now in our house, my parents, when they want to say a swear word, they say rhinoceros. And the kid is looking at me in all sincerity and telling me this secret about their home life. They say rhinoceros, and then the child gave it a 1, 2, 3 classic comedian's pause and says, "We say rhinoceros a lot at my house."
Oh my God. Classic.
This is perfect.
Oh,
I can't remember if I ever talked, because I wanted so much to call those parents right away and say, "Way to go! It was
a great idea,
great story." But I can't remember if I did or not.
You kind of turn rhinoceros into a swear word, though.
Well, you see, that's there should be some delicious, slightly
naughty
pleasures in life, and if rhinoceros is is what it turns into for you, then more power to you.
I might borrow that. That's good.
Yeah. Well, you're five and six.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, powerhouses.
Yes.
Are they incredibly different from each other?
Yes.
Yes. I had a 2-year older brother and a 2-year younger sister, and. I mean, I know it's science and I know it's genetics, but the differences are just incredible.
It's amazing.
Between me and my brother, you know.
Right. We come through our parents, right? You know, and we all have our own souls. So while the genetics might be similar, we're just all individuals.
Ain't that grand?
It is.
Aren't you glad?
I am. We don't want to all be the same.
I'm so glad all 18 of your wonderful people are not cookie-cutter people.
Absolutely.
I mean, even if it were possible, I'm glad it doesn't work that way. Well, we're sneaking up on another break here. Thanks again for listening this morning. You are listening to Conversations on WDRT. My guest today is Carrie Trevoranos.
Lovely. Thank you.
You stay right there. We're coming back. We're back. Ed Holohan with you this morning on Conversations. My guest is Carrie Trevoranos. We left off talking about something, and of course I can't remember it because we were talking instead of remembering at the time, but I do know where I want to go. I need to know, my dear, we know what you do. Why do you do it? What's the juice for you in teaching? Mm. A tiny little question.
Yeah, I love this question, by the way. I mean, the juice, that just says it all, right? I want to borrow this and kind of skip small talk from now on. Just ask people that.
I tell you, it's really effective on first meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, hello, Steve. What's the juice for you?
Yes, right. Maybe we could talk about the weather for a minute and then
yes,
go into it.
I do know what you mean. It is. It's a question.
Yeah. Well, I think, have you ever seen this diagram when you're trying to figure out what to do with your life and there's like three spheres and they can be more spheres,
yes,
and they overlap?
Yes.
I've seen it various ways, but there's what you're passionate about and or what you're good at or what's interesting to you,
mm-hmm.
and then what the world needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's it. That's a vocation, right? And for me, that's what teaching is. I don't question it because it's got all of
you're
those.
You're talking about... Now you see all these intersections,
yes,
where this
right in the
sphere
middle there.
Overlaps this sphere, and the more of those you see, intersections, that is,
right,
then the righter something looks,
right? And when you hear people talk about wanting to make a change, it's usually because something's missing, like it stopped being interesting,
yeah.
or it's not, you know, as valid anymore in the world, or they don't feel challenged, or, you know, all if they're not all
or it's
there.
Making you angry, or it's,
yeah,
you know,
any reason,
yeah.
So, I mean, I just feel like it's right in the middle, so I don't question it. Or if one of those were to fall away, I suppose I could lean back on the other, too. But
okay.
it doesn't, it's all there. It's a vocation for me, and it weaves into my life. It fits well in my life, and I feel connected to it. I don't question it. It's really, it feels very settling. I mean, we've
this
all...
This is a great answer, by the way.
You know, I mean, we've all been seekers, I think, or mm-hmm. maybe are still seekers. And so when you find something that is solid and you can count on it, oh, it just feels really settling and grounding.
That is the truth. I remember up until I did it for a living for 30-some years, I didn't know that people invented toys and games, you know, for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I confess I had no idea... I happened into it. I didn't have spheres that were overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
But if I lay that method on what I did for all those years, my goodness, look at this. It's like a 98%
yeah, pretty
match.
Perfect, right?
And it's a great way to look at the world. Would you hold that diagram up to the microphone so people can see the
right.
actual graph that we're talking about? I wish we could.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish we could. I tell you what, maybe when we do some publicity for this show, we'll just put that graph up
right
there.
Right up there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we'll call it Carrie's Life.
You know, I used it actually for my students when they're choosing their eighth grade project.
Oh, do you?
And I had
that's brilliant.
I had them, they didn't have to satisfy all of them because
right.
they're not going to, you know, major in this or have this be their career, but I wanted them to think about it in that way,
mm-hmm.
not just have it be an easy, like, well,
mm-hmm.
I already do this thing, so let's
yeah,
do
Yeah, I did this
that.
Last week. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and to think about, well, what actually is challenging and what's important, you know, because there is a service aspect to some of these projects,
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always know this? I mean, now you know that you're
yeah.
born to teach. Did you always know you were going to teach? Was it an aha moment? Was it a long process?
I did not always know it, and I think it was kind of an aha moment after some seeking, you know, in my 20s and
mm-hmm.
trying different things. But I was just thinking this morning of kind of a pivotal, sometimes there's a pivotal moment or a pivotal person. And I mean, there were probably several of those, but I worked at a bicycle shop for about 13 years in all different aspects, sales, and then in the office and buying and marketing and, you know, paying the bills or, you know, all those things.
I had
and,
no idea.
Yeah. And I think I had graduated college and I was there out on the sales floor and one of my old middle school teachers came in to buy a bike. And I remembered him. He was a science teacher, physics teacher, and we had a great relationship. And he didn't say much, but he said, yeah, I could tell he was kind of like, oh, you're still here?
Oh, and, okay. And okay. Did you hear it that
I
way?
I heard it that you're way. Like, he didn't mean anything by it, but it was this authentic, like, oh, I thought you were going to do something different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing who I was. And that, it...
Oh, wow. God,
I think that was important. I'm glad he was honest or let something slip or, you know, because I think I probably wasn't, you know, realizing some potential or that there was some destiny that I needed to go and find. You know, we can get kind of stuck, especially, you know, after college, there's like the momentum kind of stops.
It's so easy to sit still. Yeah.
You know, you have to make a leap and leave something behind. And so I think that was a pivotal moment. And I think I'd probably been, you know, scared or nervous about being a teacher because I really held them in high regard and also expected a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And maybe even as a student, I was pretty judgmental of them. You know, I wanted them to be a good teacher.
Right.
And, you know, maybe didn't want to put myself in that scrutiny. But then my niece went to a Waldorf school and my sister found the Waldorf school.
That makes a little bridge for me. I was wondering how you got from... how were you educated? Traditional?
Traditional, yeah. Public school. My parents... We lived in the city of Milwaukee, and then we moved to the suburbs right before I went to kindergarten, so I was in the same school system from kindergarten all the way through college, so that was nice and stable.
Right. This was secular, I assume?
Yes.
Not private schools?
Right. Okay. It was public school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Suburban, you say?
Suburban on the south side of Milwaukee. The town was called Greendale.
Is that where Jane Schmidt's from?
She might be there. I meet people all the time. Uh-huh. Like, you know, our rival sports team or something.
Yeah, that was. I got to share with folks that Steve, who is engineering this show, grew up rural Wisconsin, and he just told us the story about coming to Milwaukee to wrestle.
Yes.
And, you know, when cultures collide, bam, great education.
Right.
It's a great really education. Mm-hmm. So you're a suburban kid. Is that everything that I think it is, cul-de-sacs? And
it totally was cul-de-sacs. Greendale was a green belt community that was designed, I think after World War I, to be low-income housing. And so it's kind of built around this sweet little central village, and then there's something called the Greendale Originals, which are row houses.
Really?
And then kind of more
sprawl. Are they still there?
Around that. Yes.
I would like to see that.
It's
very
sweet.
I'm serious. I admire ambitious projects.
Yeah.
With good goals.
And they're, I mean, those little row houses aren't low income anymore. You know, because they're kind of coveted.
Nothing is.
Right.
Yes.
I think my parents chose it because they had a good school system and a good music program. They looked for a good music program.
Tell me about that. Were they?
It kind of runs in the family. My parents were musicians, and all my aunts and uncles on my mom's side majored in music.
Oh, no kidding. Mm-hmm. You mean seriously musical? I mean, they pursued it.
Yeah, my dad was a working musician.
Really? Tell me about
He's a horn player.
Yeah.
He played for the Milwaukee Ballet Orchestra for about 38 years,
Good
I think.
Good for him. I want to know him.
Yeah, you're the Symphony Sunday guy, so you could chat.
I would. Wow, that's neat. And Mama?
Yeah,
what was
she played French horn too. They met in band.
Come on, everybody.
And my sister and I played horn too. And there was one time we did play a horn quartet, the four of us. And in
really?
Yep. And then,
you know, I'm looking for an opening act for a project I have going.
Most of us have hung up the horn.
Would you say that again?
Hung up the horn.
What a great way to put it. Yeah, I hung up the horn in 22.
You can just picture them all hanging up.
Hanging up there, yeah. Were you all French hornists?
Yes, and...
Now, hold it, Carrie.
But I played piano, and my sister played piano, and my mom played piano, and then... string bass, and I was a singer. That was my...
You played string bass?
Yes, I still play string bass
a little bit. Well, you're tall enough, too. I see, I never could because, you know, my nose would be right on the...
We're the same height, aren't
string.
We?
Pretty much.
So I think I'm probably smaller.
Pretty much, I guess. So you grew up... Did you play at home? Did you...
Yeah, you know, I was a little nervous to play at home because I... You know, with musician parents, you would be practicing and somebody would say, B flat. And
oh, no kidding. Oh, no kidding. But, yeah, that would be a little pressure.
But I would wait until they would go grocery shopping or something, and then I would just sing my heart out.
Did you? Were you one of those kids? Are you one of those kids? You wait till the house is empty and then you give it your best Streisand?
I would love, I loved a good practice room. You know, in college when you could close yourself in and it's soundproof and
it's
you could
important.
Just do whatever in there. I loved that.
Do you have one now? Let's make
an
one.
An angry room?
No, I never realized before, Carrie, and thank you for this insight, that your angry room and your practice room are the same room.
My mother-in-law says everybody needs an angry room. You know, I'm not alone too much right now.
Well, that's why you need the room.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with a... Like they do here on the studios with, you know, on air sign right outside the door, which is bright red and the door is closed and do not walk through this door because I'm here now.
Right.
Let's make one of those.
We should. Yeah, rent it out. I have my class.
You're right. It would be in demand.
I have my classroom after hours and in the summer. And there's a piano in there. I've done a fair amount of singing in there.
Nice. Nice. Do you perform?
I try not to.
How do I ask that? Yes.
Sometimes I'm trying to do a little more. Like I sang a duet with Dodie at Martin Luther King Assembly. And
are you a soprano?
I'm a soprano.
Okay. Nice.
And she and I have done a couple things over the years. And
she's fun to work with.
Yeah.
She's a hoot.
She's amazing.
That's a word. Yeah. That's a good word. Were you... you know, we talked about reading before. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up a reader?
I think so. I had to think back about this one. I loved books. And I think right now I'm so steeped in children's literature because I'm having kids, little kids. You know, I think mostly it's children's literature. But, you know, a few books stand out to me that, you know, I don't think I just read everything. I don't think I was a voracious reader. I think I've always kind of filtered.
Do you have a preference now about fiction or biography or something, but not that? Short stories?
Probably poetry.
Oh, really? Okay.
Partly because of time. You know, as a teacher, you have to...
That's true.
You have to do a lot of reading as a teacher. So teachers talk about, like, oh, I just want to read a novel, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm reading Outlander right now. This series? It's like super thick books and 6, 7, 8 of them. And that's just kind of fun. I usually use it as a retreat from, you know. So I kind of want it to be lighter or interesting or comfortable or romantic or something. Yeah.
I find that I read in binges. I mean, I have, compared to most people, I have all the time in the world, being a retired little old guy. But it does shut off from time to time. I don't want to read, you know.
Right.
I do like being quiet. Believe it or not, I do like being quiet very much. And a lot of times that's plenty. That's good enough.
Right.
You know?
We're going for a walk. I find I kind of default to being active. And so I like audiobooks for that reason.
Since we became townies, I have rediscovered the joys of walking, you know, every day, at least mile and a half, 2 miles.
That's
and
great.
I happen to know it's good for me.
Yes.
But completely aside from that, it's time basically rather quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's punctuated by 2 or 3 hellos.
Yep.
And that's plenty. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just finished, speaking of reading, and I can't tell you to go out and buy it because this is community radio. I could tell you where to... No, I can't do that either. I just finished a huge volume of Ursula Le Guin's short stories. It's called The Unreal and the Real, and that's all I'm going to say about it, except to say read it before you die. It is a collection of 39 phenomenal short stories.
Mm.
Some of them way into science fiction and some of them fairy tales. And
I'm glad you said that.
The lady could write anything, and she did. And the unreal and the real. Look it up when you get the chance.
Eighth grade sometimes has a short story block for creative writing.
Ah,
and
yeah.
So I could maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Grab that.
Ooh, we're running out of time here, but I do need to ask you, since it's one of my favorite things. Do you already know what play you're doing this year?
Oh, I have some ideas.
Now, I know you...
I know I won't
be
tell you.
Quiet, but...
I wanted to do a musical, and I've been wanting to do this since first grade, and I haven't heard a lot of my students sing, but I did just see one in The Little Mermaid, and I know she can sing. It's a big undertaking, but I want to read the script and see if it's still applicable.
Okay. I'm so impressed, and I love that you and your crew, meaning your students, do that every year. Now, when I was their age, if I memorized or had in my head more than 2 minutes of dialogue or a song, I would have astounded myself. From the very earliest years, I see these kids come out and give me 20 minutes without a script in sight.
Right.
It's remarkable. How do you do that?
Well, their memory forces are so strong at that time, and they don't start to go away. I mean, a little bit in the middle school years, it's harder for them to memorize, but as kids, they just suck it all in. I mean, even like if you sing a song for them, they know it better than you the next day, and they'll correct you. Yeah, they're so clear, right? They're not clouded by all the things we think about.
I got so much in the way up here, or I feel like I do from time to time. It's like something has to move for something new to get in, but they got plenty of room, don't they?
And then again, it's a story.
Yeah.
So they want to tell the story as it's supposed to be told.
Yeah. We're coming down to it. Can you? Someone comes to you, says, "I want to be a teacher." Give me 30 seconds on what you tell them, like, no, run away, or yes, please come in.
Well, I think the first thing I'd say is don't take advice from somebody who doesn't know you. And the second thing I would say is it's really beautiful and important work, and if you're called to do it, there's a reason you're called to do it.
Oh.
So answer that call, and don't let the barriers, the things that you think about, like, oh, but that sounds hard, or that sounds stressful, or that sounds like too many hours, that stuff you figure out.
Yeah.
So if you're called to it, go toward that call. You know, it's kind of like falling in love.
Okay.
You know, and you just kind of, it chooses you.
Yeah.
And if,
for sure.
And if somebody were to, and then you start to work at it, right? And if somebody were to say, well, relationships are hard. You have to work.
I don't do them.
Right. So you don't, I wouldn't discourage anybody. I would just
go fall in love with it. You have to listen first, don't you, for the call and then be open to it. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for everything else you taught me today, and not just how to pronounce your last name. We are coming down to the end. I hope you all out there in Radio Land have enjoyed this conversation half as much as I have, because then you've had a good time. Thank you, dear lady. What a treat.
You're welcome, and thank you. It's been fun.
You are so welcome. You've been listening to Carrie Trevoronis right here on Conversations. My name is Ed Hollihan, and I'm going to ask you to tune in every Thursday morning at 9 for another conversation. You take good care.